So, Ed, let's start at the top here. You're very hungover. What happened last night?
Oh, Ben, it's just...
And also, stop. Right. That mouse, stick it up your ass, yeah?
I was just doing that for you. And, wait, listen to this.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I'm in the countryside. There's birds, there's dogs, there's a farmhouse, there's all sorts going on.
I can't hear any of that right now, for what it's worth.
Obviously, you don't drink, but there must have been times when you did, and it's just over the Christmas period. I think it was like on the 22nd of December, I was just like, oh. And Hattie was like, what's wrong? And I was like, it's just going to be so much drinking. And she was like, yeah, but you don't have to drink. But I don't know. I feel like you rarely have a choice around Christmas time.
Why do you feel like you don't have a choice, though? So I was talking to someone else who is trying to cut down for the holiday period, and they failed miserably as well.
It's because it's just easier to not say no.
Why? I say no all the time.
I don't know. Someone like, say someone's going around pouring out champagne. And it's like, do you want some? And you go, oh, I'm all right, thanks. And then people want to inquire why. It's like, oh, why not? It's like, oh, I'm just, taking it easy this Christmas. And it's like, oh, is everything all right? And then you get into a long conversation. So, the easiest solution is just to get drunk and be hungover and hate yourself.
It's probably harder for you because you have established that you do drink. To go from drinking to not drinking is a bigger change than me, who's never drank.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, once you've established yourself as a not drinker.
People just stop asking.
And don't even get me started on the hangovers just get worse and worse, Ben. And I said to my dad, I was like, so obviously my hangovers got worse from 18 to 25. I said, does it cap out at some point, or do they just keep getting worse? And he just kind of looked at me with a sympathetic look, like to say it just keeps getting worse.
Oh dear. So how bad is it now?
All right. It's just like a lingering headache. Yeah. And I just had a nice hangover poo. Slightly different consistency to a normal poo.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It's cleansing the system, Ben.
That is grim. How much did you have to drink last night?
Well, we thought it would be funny to go to a club later in the evening, one haven't been to for years, and we thought we'd go for the most teenage drinks possible. So we had a round of WKDs, a round of Smirnoff Ices, and then some Jaeger bombs.
Do you find that you have a different hangover depending on what you drink? So if you drink lager, it's different if you just drink spirits.
Yeah. And red wine hangover is the worst, I think. All the tannins.
Yeah. What are those? Why do they make a difference?
I don't know. It's like sulfites or something. There's something.
Yeah, I know the sulfites because I used to work with someone who's massively allergic to them. So she couldn't drink them.
I don't know, I wish I knew, because I think they give you worse headaches, and the headaches apparently is because your brain kind of dehydrates and pulls on the inside of your skull.
That sounds disgusting. That sounds like body horror stuff.
I mean, that should make everyone stop drinking, but somehow everyone just continues. It was really funny. I had a very, honest moment. There's one of my colleagues, one of the other residential advisors is Chinese, and he was like, he just stopped me one day and was like, Ed, why did the English drink so much? And I was like, that's a very good point. I was like, I guess there's just nothing else to do. So what's the source of you not drinking? You just thought, it's not good for me.
Because I don't have to be in the situation you're in right now, Ed.
It's just a hangover. It's just not worth it.
I didn't actually get, when I did drink in the past, I didn't actually get hangovers that were that bad. Though I think I'm mostly stuck to spirits.
I think you should try it out now and just have a hangover for comparison, and you'll be like, wow, this has got so much worse.
No, there's no upside there. And I think when I did drink lager or ales, I think, I felt a lot rougher the day after. But I didn't used to get it that bad. I enjoy much more having full control.
Yeah. But you can have, you can definitely get merry and be in control.
Yeah, that's the old Mitchell and Webb sketch, isn't it? The two-pint optimum. And then after 2 pints, I think it is, everything goes wrong.
The two-pint optimum. Yeah, I mean, you never maintain that nice level. It just gets worse. Yeah, we were actually, last night we were talking about, our graphs of drunkenness. And unfortunately, the Barkers kind of have, an exponential graph. It's the more alcohol we have, the more alcohol we want. And it's not good.
Yeah. I don't think that's unique to you guys, though. I think that's everyone. Alcohol gets a lot more Moorish the more you have of it.
Have you had a nice Christmas, Ben?
Yeah, I've had a nice Christmas. It's been quite quiet. I haven't really done much out of the ordinary, so very boring for podcast topics, I'm afraid.
No, I won't settle for that. What's the least interesting thing that's happened?
The least interesting thing that's happened. Oh god. Yeah. I tried some Brussels sprouts.
Wait, you haven't before?
No, I've had them ages ago, but I didn't like them ages ago. So I tried them again and I still don't like them, it turns out. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably the most mundane thing.
What did you think of them?
Yeah, not great. About the same as last time.
Oh. Well, yeah, give it another few years, you know, you might like them then.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? They just taste like, I don't know, like boiled cabbage or something like that. Horrible.
Yeah, they're like tiny cabbages that taste a little bit off. I like Brussels sprouts.
Oh, you psycho. What's the best bit of your Christmas lunch? What's the best bit on the plate?
Oh, stuffing. No, pigs in blankets.
Yeah, but I thought you were vegan.
Well, once I got my vitamin D deficiency, I need to treat myself with meat.
Okay. You know. And how's that going?
Purely for safety. Oh, it's really enjoyable, Ben.
Yeah.
What's great, though, is because, you know, people can't say, you know, oh, you've gone against your morals because it's medically justified.
You've got the prescription for pigs in blankets.
Yeah. 5 pigs in blankets a day. Keep you strong and healthy.
You know what we had yesterday? We had halloumi in blankets. That was pretty good.
What were they wrapped in?
Bacon.
Oh, that sounds good.
You should try it. It's really, really good. Stick them in the oven for a bit.
Halloumi blankets. Dogs in duvets. That's another good name for them.
Dogs in duvets. Is that still pigs in blankets, though?
Or angels on horseback. Yeah.
Is it devils in blankets? Are prunes wrapped in bacon?
What? Really?
Yeah, we had that on Christmas Day as well. Prunes wrapped in bacon. I think it's devil on horseback or something like that, they call it.
Yeah, I think you're right, because my brother's got a cocktail called Devil's Horseback, and it's a prune and bacon, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really want to try one. It didn't sound like an appealing combination.
It is good, because like, pork is the best for sweet stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. We had a lot of cheese as well, that's always good.
We do cover some ground on this podcast, don't we, Ben?
Oh, we certainly do, we certainly do.
I mean, two people as knowledgeable as us, I think it's really important that our opinions are shared.
Do you find Christmas to be a bit of an anticlimax now, though?
Yeah, each year it's a little bit less magical, isn't it?
Yeah, because I remember like when I was younger, I was still riding the Christmas high come Boxing Day and even the 27th, because it's still that gap between Christmas and going back to school. But now it's just like the 26th comes and you're like, oh yeah, the whole thing's over now. Let's take the tree down. Let's get this over with.
Yeah, and it's just a little bit depressing. And then, you know, when you're younger, you don't have to do any of the work, but you get to a certain age and it's like, well, you have to help prepare the roast and you have to like help set everything up. And
yeah, exactly. When you're a kid, you just get transported about with all your toys or go and see all your friends or your relatives and it's all great.
Yeah,
but
get that new game out, start playing on it all day.
Yeah, exactly. And you just do your own little thing. Whereas when you're an adult, yeah, you have to ask the question of, do you need any help with that? And it's like, oh God, I'd rather not help. I should have just brought a sandwich and let's just get this over with. And
I was chief peeler this year.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah,
very important.
That's the job they give to people who aren't very good in the kitchen. So recently, Ed, you visited our mutual friend, theoretical physicist extraordinaire Patrick in Germany, where he's doing his postdoc.
Yeah.
So where in Germany exactly was that and how long were you there for?
Well, Ben, let me tell you, if this feels like a very formal interview, Aachen in Germany, which is like near Dusseldorf.
And okay.
It's near basically every German city. Yeah.
How long were you there for?
2 days.
Oh, not long then, just a quick hop over and back.
Whistle stop tour. Yeah. It's really nice though, because, you know, quite often when you go to a country, you go to like the main capital. It was like a nice little small university town.
Yeah.
So I feel like I got more of an authentic German experience.
Yeah, so we've had a similar experience. When we were out traveling Europe in our camper van, doing big hills on our bicycles, at one point the camper van developed a massive hole in the exhaust, which was kind of like having underfloor heating for the van, because the hole was on the top of the exhaust. So all of the exhaust fumes would warm up the floor of the van, which Ooh. Sounds great, but the downside is it was ear-shatteringly loud.
Did you get any fumes?
Not too bad. But so what we had to do is we had to stop somewhere and get it fixed. So we went to Germany to get it fixed. in a very small town, which I forget the name of entirely now. But it was quite interesting to stop in this town, which was clearly not a tourist destination. It was just a typical German town, and just see how everyone lives. And one thing that was really striking was just how well people speak English out there. We went to the equivalent of what was, I don't know, what would you call it in the UK? Halfords. So just like an auto repair, you know, big department shop type thing.
Das Halford, yeah.
Yeah. And we went to one of those. So if you can imagine, it's just a standard retail job, yeah?
Yeah.
No frills, just a standard retail job. We went to the guy at the counter and was like, oh, do you speak English? And he's like, ooh, a little bit. And we're like, okay, well, we'll just try our best here.
it's like that big train sketch where it's like, do you speak English? Like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I don't. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can be of more help. Yeah.
So we just went along with it and we said, oh, we've got a van, which is this, and it needs a new exhaust. Could you fit us in? And his reply was, no, I don't think we have that exhaust in right now. And also, we're very highly booked up. But you could try the auto repair shop around the corner. You go right on this road and then left on another road. They might be able to help you. Here, I'll write down the mobile number. I'll write down the telephone number for it. And it's like, all right, yeah, your English is rubbish, mate.
Just a small amount.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
I'm very sorry about my thick accent. It doesn't come through.
So it just goes to show that, well, at least what we found, everyone out there speaks English better than we do, so it's quite embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, your English is coming along well, though, isn't it?
Oh,
the old classic.
Yeah, never gets old. But did you find that as well, that they all speak very, very good English?
Yeah, and the annoying thing is, it makes it very difficult to learn a language if you live in another country. And this is what Patrick, superphysicist, was saying. Because as soon as someone hears his English accent, they're just like, ah, you are English, I shall speak in English. And he has to kind of tell them off and be like, no, please speak in German.
Yeah. So is he trying to pick it up while he's out there then?
Yeah, so they have, like, at his work, I think once a week they have German Day, where everyone has to speak German. Because I think in science it's quite typical to for everyone to talk in English.
Yeah.
Quite often everyone is a different nationality. Not everyone speaks German there, but everyone can speak English. So it's like the go-between. Yeah.
Yeah, that must be difficult, though. I've heard it's quite a difficult language to learn as well.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of exceptions and strange, like,
yeah,
words shoved together.
Oh my god, that chair.
This is going to be so much fun if you did it.
Yeah, can't wait. So, go on then, what else happened on your trip?
Oh yeah, so right. So, you know the Germans are really well known for their engineering. It's like a stereotype.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was getting a train to this city from Dusseldorf Airport. And I was like, oh, brilliant, German train. You know, like a mark of engineering. And it stopped, and like I didn't really know what was going on, and then this German girl kind of tapped me on the shoulder, said something in German, and I was like, sorry, I'm English. And she said, oh, do you know,
don't do the accent every time,
do you know why the train has stopped? And I said, which is funny, because if I don't speak German, I clearly don't know what's going on. And I was like, no, sorry. And then the train started going backwards, Ben.
Oh, so she didn't know why the train had stopped either?
No, we're trying to go one way and the train's going the other way.
Oh, dear.
And I said, what's happening? And she said, oh, the train's going backwards. And I was
like, thanks for that. I realise.
She was like, don't worry about it. The train's just going backwards. Like, oh, okay.
So why was the train going backwards?
I never found out.
Oh.
She said, oh, this happens sometimes. So that kind of upset me. I was like, oh, but I gave them the benefit of the doubt. I was like, I'm sure trains don't always go backwards. Like, the engineering must be on point most of the time.
Yeah.
But on that same note, on the train and on the plane, there were like some really annoying Brits. And I know like Brits have a really bad reputation abroad.
Yeah, they really do. Like,
so I feel like when I'm abroad, I want to be a good ambassador of the country. You know, it's like, look, yeah, we're all nice, polite people, put rubbish away.
Mm.
And there was like this British, a couple arguing on the train, and everyone's kind of giving them looks. And I think they were arguing, like, thinking they had the freedom to say whatever they wanted because no one could understand what they were saying. But obviously, as you say, Germans all speak amazing English.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, very embarrassing. And then, they are on the plane, we had a British guy was a clapper, you know,
ooh,
when you land.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But that doesn't normally happen with the Brits. Stereotypically, that's quite an American thing, right?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So that's quite strange. But was it just like one person, or was it like a little enclave of people?
It was one guy, and he was like clapping, standing up, looking around, just like, come on, shut up, be respect for the pilot.
Oh, see, I'd assume if it was a Brit clap and they were like, oh, yeah, well done, you flew the plane, well done, yeah.
Like sarcastic, yeah. No, but this guy was like, come on, you know, look at the, he's landed the plane. It's like, yeah, it's his job. Like, if the bus driver gets to me to my location, I'm like, oh, well done, you know. You didn't go somewhere else instead.
Flying's a weird one, though, because you never get on a bus and the bus driver doesn't, you know, go on a little tannoy and go, hello, everyone, today I'll be your bus driver. My name is... But pilots still feel the need to do that. For whose benefit? I don't know.
I think it's because it's like, it's an experience, isn't it? It's left over from the age of novelty where flight was like a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Yeah, but now it's just like, all right, we get it. You're a pilot. Shut up. Get us there.
If I was a bus driver, though, I would like to do that.
Yeah. Just introduce yourself to everyone who gets on. Hello, I'm Ed.
Hello.
I'll be your bus driver today.
I hope you have a pleasant journey. Wind speed is 3 knots today.
The weather at your destination is probably the same as right here because it's just around the corner.
When you arrive, the time will be exactly the same because we're in the same time zone. If you want any snacks, there's a little corner shop at the next door.
Yeah, you can get off and get a Greggs. On the British people abroad thing, this is an example of how... you know, how badly the Brits are perceived abroad. My former boss was an Italian, and apparently a common name for Brits in Italy is obviously the Italian for pink pigs.
Ink pigs?
Pink pigs.
Pink pigs?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because we're all fat and sunburnt in Italy.
I mean, it's funny. See, that's the kind of racist stuff that I like, because it's like, I'm on board with that. I agree with it generally. It's offensive to me. Oh, yeah. So, whilst in Germany, we walked past a little VR place, had a few beers, and we
What's
were
like... What's a VR place exactly, though?
Oh, sorry, virtual reality. It's like a virtual reality arcade.
Right.
Yeah. So, we went in this virtual reality space, and it was insane.
What have they got set up in there? What's the thing? Is it Oculus, HTC Vive, or...?
HTC Vive.
Oh, the good one as well.
It was really cool, though, because they're one of the few places where you play in the same space. Mm. So, like, a lot of places you're in the same virtual space online, but this was, like, same physical space and same virtual space. You can, like, interact with each other.
So what did you play?
We played, like, it was made by them. So it was, like, you know, they have, like, virtual reality arcades all across Germany.
Yeah.
And there's all their homemade mini games. But, you know, one was, like, assembling a burger. So I thought instead of actually trying to beat him by assembling more burgers, I would just sabotage him. So I was, like, spraying ketchup all over his burgers.
Nice. That sounds a little bit like Overcooked.
Yeah, but I honestly, VR is one of those things that you can't really you can't really judge like how good it's going to be until you actually do it. It's a bit like having an advert for a fragrance.
Yeah, I've been telling people that. I've never even tried it, and I know quite a lot of people who are quite dismissive of it, and I'm saying it's one of those you just don't get it until you've tried it.
I know, but it blew my mind. It was like just another level of immersion. You forget you're actually, you know, in a room.
Yeah, but is it ever going to be like mainstream, fully adopted by everyone, like a consumer product?
I think once it becomes affordable, I think at the moment it's in its infancy. You know, it's like when computers were first around.
Yeah.
You know, it cost £1,500. Not everyone's going to have that. But like, I think in about, you know, 2 or 3 years, it'll become super affordable. And that's when everyone will take it on.
They've got a lot of like kinks to iron out. Like there's a lot of wires involved in them. And that kind of ruins the immersion when you've got like, you know, 16 wires running down your back.
I think that's all the technology is like. You'd want to deepen that level of immersion, and anything which kind of takes you out of the experience is ruins it. Yeah, like wires and walls.
I think there's a few companies out there trying to make it wireless though, so that'll probably sort that out.
I tell you what was awkward though is that I was like, I was really getting into it, and we were like shooting some aliens and stuff, and I was like ducking and moving around, and I got really sweaty.
Oh,
and he takes the headset off and. Like, I think Patrick was, he's not a sweaty man. And
no.
So he gave a little wipe down to Patrick's headset, and he spent a good 2 minutes while talking to us, wiping down mine. And I was like, oh God, he knows. I've just...
That's your socially awkward moment of the week, I think.
Oversweating a headset.
Yeah. I was just about to say, what's the conjunctivitis situation? Because I can see a lot of people getting pink eye from sharing headsets in a public arena.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Patrick was saying, for some reason in Germany, you tend to trust everyone. So it's like, yeah, I am putting on a headset, which, you know, thousands of people have used, but this guy seems to know what he's doing, and I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah, this guy knows his way around an alcohol wet wipe. Oh, that's interesting, though. I remember in London, there was a few like little pop-up VR things, but I'm waiting for it to be in the home. Yeah, I'm waiting for it to be fully adopted in the home. And in fact, we have a bit of space in our living room that could be repurposed for a little VR area, but just the price isn't right yet, and the games aren't there either.
I'm convinced most people will have like a VR room in their house. I think that will happen.
But for what end? Is it purely going to be a gaming thing, or is it also going to be like an experience thing where you...
I think an experience thing. I think it'll be... People will kind of get addicted to the point where, like, you know, a lot of unemployed people will just spend all their time in virtual reality. Like escapism, like Second Life, but, you know, you have your avatar. I think it'll be like, you know, you'd live in like a virtual world.
Yeah.
But where, like, you can do all sorts of weird stuff you can't do here.
Yeah. A bit like, what was it, Ready Player One? That's how that whole film's about.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
No, I haven't seen it either. great topic of conversation there.
But I want to tell you about my experience trying to find an umbrella in Germany, because it was raining like a ridiculous amount. So we were trying to walk around. My umbrella like went inside out, just popped off and off into the distance, which was amazing.
I can see you being a weak umbrella buyer. Is that a really insulting thing to say to someone? But
what you mean? So I will buy cheap umbrellas.
Not cheap, but I can just see you not like looking at and thinking about it from a structural engineering perspective.
No, I think you're right there. Yeah.
Hmm.
So my umbrella flew off. And Germany's really weird. It's got really like strict regulations on when you can sell things at the weekend. So Saturday, going around, couldn't find umbrellas anywhere. Finally found one in a museum. So I was like, oh, I was gonna have to buy like, this weird arty umbrella with like some painting on. And they were all sold out. And then on the Sunday, where everywhere's closed, you know, I've been looking for an umbrella all weekend, been getting drenched, and it turns out that two doors down from where Patrick lives is an umbrella shop.
Just sells umbrellas.
Just umbrellas. Yeah. And it was closed. It was closed because it was Sunday.
Oh. Well.
How can you support yourself, Ben? How can you support yourself just selling umbrellas? There's always shops like that. Like I remember in London, there was a shop that just sold luggage.
Yeah, but that's one of those where they'll sell loads because everyone needs, you know, you get to your destination and your suitcase falls apart. You're screwed. You've got to buy luggage.
So you think they rely on those few customers and they'll just charge?
Yeah, they rely on suckers like you who turn up and it's absolutely, you know, hammering it down, raining.
Are you telling me this umbrella shop is going to be really expensive?
I reckon you were going to be taken for a ride if you went in there.
But a whole shop... And it was just umbrellas. It wasn't like all kinds of wet weather wear, you know, coats and stuff. It was just umbrellas, and they offered umbrella repair.
Umbrella repair?
Yeah, they're in it for life. An umbrella is for life, not just for Christmas, Ben.
Oh, evidently, yeah. What's the German for umbrella? I bet it's mental.
I'll have to have a look. Go on, can you Google? I can't be bothered.
This is a high effort podcast here, ladies and gentlemen. Are you feeling that gentle at the moment?
Yeah, I'm just trying to minimize movement.
Regenschirm. Oh, hang on. Regenschirm. That's umbrella. There you go. That's what you need to be looking out for.
Regenschirm.
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 And obviously with a capital R because they capitalize all nouns over there.
But it was great. I recommend it, Aachen. One of the best Christmas markets in the world.
Oh, nice. What did you buy me?
Printin.
Printin?
Yeah, it's like gingerbread.
Oh.
But it's got all sorts of special things in, Ben.
Oh, nice.
The Colonel's 12 Spices.
I look forward to that turning up in the post, then. What the hell is Quadrilla?
That's that fracking company. I don't really know why I wrote that down. I think that meant to go somewhere else.
Okay.
I just saw in the news. So Quadrilla is this like fracking company that is doing like exploratory fracking to see if it's viable in the UK.
Yeah.
And it caused an earthquake, and the BBC said that the earthquake was like dropping a melon. Like that's the equivalent was. Quadrilla were trying to dumb it down and be like, oh, don't worry, it's just like dropping a melon.
Oh, so the company who caused the earthquake was saying, essentially, on the Richter scale, it's on par with just dropping a melon on the ground.
Yeah, I just thought that tickled me.
All right. Well, this is probably going to be the shortest segment in the show ever. You know. Actually, you know what was funny? So, for the sake of the listeners, you already know this. I've stopped reading the news entirely, and also this is another thing that I was going to talk about. On Twitter, I've implemented a long list of words that I mute, so they don't turn up in my timeline anymore.
Oh, I don't know if I knew that. Is Brexit one of them?
Yeah. So at the start of this month, the whole Brexit thing and the total incompetency of our government was kind of getting to me. And I decided that mentally, it's not a positive thing for me to dwell on these things because I can't do anything about this situation. So why even read or know about it? Because it just...
It's just going to make you sad.
Yeah, it just makes me absolutely miserable thinking about it. And I'm one of these people as well who, when these situations arise, I'll try and get to the, you know, I'll try and look in the minutia, look in all the detail and go down little Twitter holes of trying to find out what's actually going to happen. What's the real story here? Why is this happening the way it's happening? And it's not good. It's a massive waste of time for one. And also, like I said before, it just makes you miserable because it's never positive news. It's never good. So I uninstalled the BBC News app. I turned off all notifications from Google because Google just has a nasty habit of just sending you headlines every now and then. It's very rare they do it, but every now and then they'll send you one. So I've turned that off. And then I went on Twitter and I implemented a long list of words. Would you like to know the words?
I would, yeah. Can I try and guess a couple? So Brexit is one. So how many are on there?
Oh, quite a few. I've got 20 words.
20 words?
Yeah, I'm muting a lot.
And these are things that you don't want to hear about it?
Yeah, they don't appear in your timeline anymore.
So Brexit's one. I think there'll be another Brexit-related one, like EU? Anything on EU?
I haven't actually got EU in there.
No?
Probably should, though.
Miley Cyrus?
She doesn't appear, actually. As controversial a character she is.
Theresa May?
Theresa is in there, but you can't do Theresa May. It has to be single words, I think.
Yeah. Corbyn?
Corbyn is in there, yep.
Oh, this is going well. So you think you're trying to like limit politics as well?
Yeah, all political news I want to totally remove from my life. So let me just riff through the list. Vote, Corbyn, election, politician, political, Donald, Rees-Mogg,
Donald.
Boris, Tories, referendum, politics, parliament, government, Cameron, Farage, Nigel, UKIP, Theresa, Trump, Brexit.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good list.
Yeah.
I feel like you're just trying, you're burying your head in the sand, though.
Why, though?
Well, isn't it not important to know what's happening?
But I can't do anything about it, though, can I?
No, but, I mean, that's not why you stay informed.
Why do you stay informed, then?
Because I'm a masochist.
Yeah, evidently. So, the only time, as a normal citizen, you have any sort of influence on democracy or the direction the country's going to go in, is when you have a vote, when the ballots open.
So even then,
it's, you know, that's a whole conversation for another day with the voting systems and whatnot.
We'll just stick to our ill-informed opinions about politics first, and then we'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've decided the only time I'm going to care about anything, that, you know, political or country or geopolitical, you know, topics, is when I've got a vote. And then other than that, what's the point in keeping up with it? I can't do anything about it. It'll just really make me miserable. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I like to know who to be angry at. So, you know.
But I've been much happier. I'll just say I've been much happier since I've done this.
It's like blissfully ignorant. But the news will affect you. So, like, I mean, you're not worried. Will you change what you're doing now, depending on the outcome of Brexit?
But, well, the news is going to affect me either way, isn't it? If I do keep up with it or if I don't, I'm not going to be able to influence how it affects me.
Yeah, but would you rather get a letter through the post saying like, oh, you've been conscripted because we left the EU and that's what we're doing now? Or would you rather know about the debate surrounding that before it happened?
Just let it happen. Whatever. I can't do anything about the debates. If I watch the debates, I watch my own demise. At least if I don't watch the debates, I've got another few months, years, whatever, of being happy.
Oh, but you know, I like putting myself through it. Sometimes I like getting a bit angry.
Yep, the UK is particularly good at this whole group misery thing where everyone just hangs out on Twitter and tweets about how crap things are and how bad things are going to be. And
yeah, do you not like that sometimes?
I enjoy the solidarity a little bit, but beyond that, it's just it's like you say, it's masochism, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's got to the point now as well where you see people actively hoping that things go badly to teach someone a lesson. I don't know who that someone is.
Oh, God, yeah, I don't understand that. That really is just...
It's gone off the deep end, hasn't it?
How can you be so principled as to want to hurt yourself and others?
Mm. Yeah, just for the sake of what you believe is correct.
Well, I feel like when people are asked the question, do you want to stay, leave or remain, you know, it's such a complicated question that I think the general voter shouldn't be expected to understand. And so people answer that question with a simpler one. And for a lot of people, it's you know, do I want more immigrants? And for other people, it's do I want farming subsidies? For someone else, like a student, it's like, do I want to be able to move freely throughout Europe?
Yeah.
And so, like, because there's been a lot of kind of upset about immigration, and there's a lot of old people that don't like that, and even reasons simple enough, as simple as, you know, I want to make our own rules for our own country.
Hmm. But this whole not reading the news thing does seem to be working, because if a piece of news is important enough, let's say, I don't know, tomorrow Theresa May is kicked out of office and someone else goes in, I will hear about it just organically. I don't want to go out and seek it. I don't want it to come seek me. But organically, I will get the news eventually if it's important enough.
Well, Ben, big news today. I don't know if this has organically reached you. Actually, it did, because I messaged you. But the 5p bag charge is going up to 10p.
Yeah, I saw that. And actually, you're probably one of the biggest instigators of news organically reaching me somehow. You know, the other day you texted me, and all the message said was, Ben, do you think Theresa May is a horrible woman? A nasty woman? A stupid woman?
Stupid woman.
Stupid woman. So you text me just saying, Ben, do you think Theresa May is a stupid woman? And I didn't know anything about that news story because I'd obviously uninstalled all the apps. So I just replied, yeah, probably is. And then it was only like a week later where someone mentioned like, oh, that whole Corbyn thing, the stupid woman, that was just a big distraction, wasn't it? And I was like, oh, that's what Ed was saying. I thought you were just asking me if I thought she was a stupid woman, and there you go.
That's very sexist, Ben. I said stupid people. That's stupid people.
Yeah, well. And then there was another one as well. We were talking about someone who, they said basically, oh, they've just got back from holiday and they were lucky because they got it in on the last flight into Gatwick. And I was like, all right, yeah, the last flight on the night. Yeah, cool.
No, good for you. Good on you.
Yeah, yeah, well done. You got in and you got home.
No, so, you know, it's important to be like up to date with these things. It's just conversationally.
Yeah, and they just stared at me like, you don't know what happened, did you? And I was like, nope, no idea. That's an interesting story, that, though, because maybe it's a bit conspiracy theory, but we haven't seen a picture of these drones. I don't think they exist.
What's the purpose of it, then?
I think someone thought they saw it, and it was like a group hysteria thing where the group starts to think they see things in the air or...
Well, because one policeman did say there was a possibility there was never a drone, and then people were criticising him for it. He said, actually, I didn't mean that. There definitely was one. But they found a drone. They found a broken one.
Yeah, but they were just...
So if you think the person that sighted the drone would be like just a passenger in the airport, like, oh, I think I saw one over there.
Yeah, I think it's one of these things that just spiral out of control and before you know it. A bit like Brexit. But the thing is, though, knowing a little bit about drones, if you've got one of these like off-the-shelf DJI Mavic type things, they're geo-locked, so you can't actually fly them over airports, at least not easily out of the box.
What do you mean by geo-locked?
So they're always obviously looking for their GPS location, and there's like geofence around sensitive areas. So things like airports, military bases, big centers of population.
Oh yeah, I remember reading this.
So you can't actually fly them physically over these areas. They'll refuse to fly over them and they'll come back home. So if there were one over Gatwick, like all of the papers are saying and, you know, all the hysteria said, it would have to be a non-off-the-shelf drone. It would have to be something that someone built, or...
Well, and they say they think it's been modified, yeah.
Yeah, or someone that someone's built themselves, or... And if that were the case, the big commercial drones, the type of drone that can do this sort of thing, they're massive. So, I don't know.
It must have been very premeditated.
Yeah.
Well, so you think it's very unlikely?
I think it's very unlikely. I don't want to say that. I don't know. I have no idea. I've not... Beyond three articles that I read about it, I haven't really kept up with it. I just find it really strange that there's no bloody picture of the thing. What I also found interesting as well is that the amount of newspapers who were quick to jump on the maybe it's eco-terrorists with absolutely no sort of evidence that there was a drone in the first place or that it was indeed down to eco-terrorism. They just jumped on it. They're like, yeah, yeah, that might be an explanation.
But, I mean, that's the best thing. That's the best thing it's for. That's the best thing it could be for, because it's like, well, they meant well. They meant well. They stopped 140,000 people getting home for Christmas, but they meant well.
But that's not how the news works, though, is it? I mean, as someone who doesn't read the news anymore, that's not how the news is meant to work, where you just wildly speculate on what it might be.
I don't know, Ben, in the age of fake news.
Yeah, I guess that's what people do. How are you holding up, Ed?
I am struggling a little bit.
What are you going to do after you are released from the binds of the podcast?
I'm going to have a shower, but sat down.
A sit-down shower?
Yeah. Then I think I'll have some water.
Yeah.
And give it a little walk.
Have you got any plans for New Year?
Well, I have several options. One is to take my girlfriend to a party where my ex-girlfriend is there.
Ooh, not a great option.
Another option is to hang out with a lot of 20-year-olds in Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
Or stay in and watch Jules Holland.
Wow.
What about you?
I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. We've done some strange things come New Year's Eve.
There's too much pressure, isn't there?
Well, the pair of us, we don't drink, so a lot of options are straight out the window because I'm not going to be around a bunch of drunk people because it's one of the layers of hell as far as I'm concerned. Also, if you are around a bunch of drunk people, you suddenly become designated driver, which not interested in that. Thank you very much. I don't work for a taxi firm. So what we've done in the past is we've done silly things on our bikes where one year we went out to the top of Richmond Park, which is a big royal park near London. Well, it's in London anyway. It's in Richmond, obviously.
And had some tinnies. Tinnies in the park.
We thought we were dead creative and unique, and we cycled to the top of Sawyer's Hill, which is a good lookout point over all of London. And we thought we'd go up there, have a nice quiet moment on our bikes, watch all the fireworks at midnight, and go home. We got up there, and there must have been 100 people up there. So,
oh no, you're not a snowflake.
Much like everything in London, there's nothing unique anymore, and everyone knows everything. But it was really nice, because we got up there.
Yeah, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great. So we got up there, and there was no like louts, or there was no massive amount of alcohol consumption going on up there. It was just, you know, the odd bottle of wine or whatever. And come midnight, everyone did a cheer, had a little sing, and we got to watch all of the fireworks of London all at once. And it was really, really, really cool.
That does sound really good. There's too much expectation to have a good time, though, isn't there? I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to have the best night ever.
Yeah, and when I did go out, and I don't want to say party, because I've never partied in my life, but when I did go out, I found that the best nights were the ones that weren't properly planned, and it was just an informal get-together, and things, the ball starts rolling, and the night goes along at its natural pace, rather than, right, this new year, we're all going to be in the same place, going to be doing the same thing, it's going to be fantastic. When you try and make these things happen, it never works.
Well, yeah, I mean, as a partaker in the old alcohol, if someone said to me, Ed, do you want to get tremendously drunk? I'd be like, oh, no, that sounds horrible. But if I bumped into someone and said, oh, do you fancy a drink? Is that, yeah, oh, do you fancy another drink? And then that keeps going, and then you have a nice time, then that's good.
Yeah. And then another New Year's Eve, what we did was there's a very, very steep road in the middle of Matlock, which is a town in the Peak District. And we cycled our bikes up that steep road called Bank Road at the stroke of midnight, which was quite cool.
Oh, that does sound good. You're making me feel like a bad person now.
Right, probably call it a day there.
Nah.
No.
I'm not done.
You're not done.
I want to talk about 19 best ways to cook pork belly slices. Yeah, so there's this thing, right? Where, listen, this podcast isn't for entertainment. This is for me to get things off my chest.
Okay, go on.
Nah, don't rush me.
Okay, all right. Take your time. I'm here all day. Christ.
Cheers. Okay. So I often try to find out how to do things on the internet. And sorry, I'm just... I just know this is going to be a really bad segment.
It's staying in, regardless of how bad this is. It's going to stay in its entirety.
I'll often Google how to do things on the internet, and it's a thing which needs one way of how to do it. So I want to know how to cook pork belly slices. Like, what? How do I cook pork belly slices? And there'll be an article that says, the 19 best ways to cook pork belly slices. And that's an actual article I saw. Why would I need to know 19 different ways to cook them?
You're the one searching for it.
I want one way.
Did you find your one way?
Like, you know, I could say, how to replace my phone cover. And 10 ways to replace your phone cover. I only want one. I want the best way.
Yeah, but that's just the nature of the internet, though, is it? It's all about listicles. They call listicles, aren't they? Where they...
Yeah, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, and I don't know if they still do it, but they used to do it where you had to click next. So you wouldn't get all 19 ways on one page. You'd have to click next, so all the adverts refresh and they get more money.
And 10% of the page is the content and 90% is hot single mums in your area.
Well, maybe for you, Ed, but these adverts are all custom...
Do you know what? You can actually, if you look in Google's settings, the ad settings, it if it doesn't know any information about you, it guesses what your demographic is. Basically, Google thinks I'm a 35-year-old woman.
I'm just going to end the podcast there. Done.